service administration and transport. I understand that this is a new committee, but it was born out of the cluster, economic cluster committee, which in the previous first administration was chaired by one of our members who's here, Mr. Hayo. We share the membership of the committee also with the one that deals with small business, DGI, and also trading industry. So I think it is important to right from the beginning also indicate that, like as I said, this is a new committee. So all of us are on an induction route. And therefore, we want to first and foremost express our appreciation of the presence of the Deputy Minister. I understand that in the previous administration, one of the tenets was the availability at all times of the ministers when they are invited. So I was informed that this is a legacy that has to be carried through the sixth administration. But I think it will be important right at the beginning probably to introduce ourselves. My name is Kenny Muimang, the chairperson of the select committee. And then I will then request the members of the committee, starting on my extreme right, then move that way, and then they will then allow the minister, deputy minister, to introduce themselves, and then the team will then probably introduce themselves, and then I will then introduce the team that constitute the committee secretary and the researchers and also the parliamentary staff. Let's start with the Chief Whip. This is also a member of this committee. Over to you, Chief Whip, introduction.
Thanks very much, Seiso Mohai. I'm an alternate member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you all again. I remember many of you from Muskoka. So we will lock horns again. My name is Tim Browderset from the great province of KwaZulu-Natal.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. Sonia Bossa and Mpumalanga.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Chief Whip. And good morning, Deputy Minister and Inner Manager from Public Works and Infrastructure. My name is Mandla Khai. I'm from the Eastern Cape. Now, Honorable Deputy Minister will be angry with me if I don't mention that I'm from a province of the Richards. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the members. My name is Tim Bingose Aplene. I'm from Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Chairperson, my name is Hamid Dango. I'm from Gauteng.
You, Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to the Honorable Members of the Committee, DG and his team, and the support staff of the Committee. Good morning to everyone. Noxolo Kivit is my name. Let me start, Chairperson, by just briefly indicating that as it is Wednesday today, it's Cabinet Day, and therefore Minister is attending the Cabinet, and hence I'm here. Well, the new Department of Public Works and Infrastructure is we are here trying to battle with the reconfiguration, but it's an expectation that we fly and address some of the challenges of flying whilst on air. Or we're driving a car and we're expected to fix onto a moving car a tire. Because there's no point at which we will stop and say, because there's a new mandate, extended mandate for the department, then we will sit back, which is what I think also it has necessitated the committee as well to meet with the department. And therefore we are here to indicate that yes, there's a mammoth task ahead of us, but we're doing our best to try and fit into the work. The DG is here and he will be, as accounting officer, introducing his team. But as a department, we are that department that is expected to, I normally say it's a department of all departments, because any department that requires space, the master landlord of the country, any department that requires space to work from, knock at our doors. In fact, not only departments, we are the landlord of the state, because even the judiciary and even this very parliament, when you have space issues, this is the door the department you knock at. And therefore, it's a department that must at all times be on its toes. And hence my analogy of saying we are that department that is expected to fix some of the things whilst already in action in terms of our mandate. With your permission, Honorable Chairperson, we are here with our entities, but I will allow DG to introduce them. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Good morning. I'm Sam Bugela. I'm the DG in the department. I've got my colleagues who are going to introduce themselves from this side to at the back. We didn't bring entities today. It's only the department. But I will be able to engage with the committee. Maybe we should start with the MTS.
Thank you, DG and Deputy Minister and members of the committee. I'll be taking you through the annual performance plan for DPW. Just for the introduction? Okay.
Introduction.
My name is MTS Faisal, I'm the DDG for governance.
Can you repeat that?
MTS Faisal, DDG governance, risk and compliance.
My name is Jacob Maroha. I'm the acting head of PMT in the Department of Public Works.
Okay, morning, Chair. My name is Sitembe Sifane. I'm the acting director in strategic management within the Department of Public Works.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Cox Mokoro. I'm responsible for the establishment of the property management trading entity for the establishment thereof, and also driving the financial sustainability of the property management trading entity.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Swansea Matthews. I'm the DDG responsible for the Immovable Asset Register.
Good morning, Chair, Deputy Minister and Honourable Members. My name is Magdalene Shabalala from the Real Estate Investment Services Branch.
Good morning, Chair, Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members. My name is Randani Mashekwani from Internal Audit.
Good morning, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members. The name is Nkosana Kupega from the Facilities Management Section.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members. My name is Batu Mukhotu. I'm the DDG responsible for construction.
Good morning, Chair, Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members. My name is Aaron Mazibu for Finance.
Good morning, Chair, Deputy Minister, all members and everybody else. I'm CJ Abrahams. I'm with the Expanded Public Works Program Chief Director Partnership Support.
Good morning, Chair, members, Deputy Minister and DG and colleagues. My name is Regine Ngobo from Communications Public Works.
Good morning, Chair, Deputy Minister and the DG and Honourable Members. My name is Masala Elumatadi, based in the office of the DG.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister and Honourable Members and the DG and colleagues. My name is Sipho Lunyao is my surname. I'm in the office of the Deputy Minister. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Chair, Deputy Minister, DG, Honourable Members. My name is Tulani Stemele. I'm in the Minister's Office, PLO.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Vivetu Makeda. I'm from PMG Offices.
Thank you. There are members that moved in. As the team of the Deputy Minister has introduced themselves, can we request those members of the Select Committee to introduce themselves?
Eric Lansman, Northwest.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Brenda Matebula. I'm from Limpopo Province.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Hlupheka Mtileni. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tsepo Makanye. I'm the committee researcher.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rishni Govinda. I'm the media officer for this committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Enrico Bazir, and I'm the committee assistant to this committee.
Thank you. Thank you. Members and the Deputy Minister's team. Indeed, the Deputy Minister, the Minister did send a letter of apology echoing the message that you conveyed about her non-attendance. So we appreciate also the announcement by the Deputy Minister. We also have another apology from Honorable Honorable Lund has also apologized. So these are the two apologies that we have for today. We will then, without any waste of time, invite the DG to attend the presentation. What we will probably expect, like as the minister has indicated, given the reconfiguration, I think one of the the work that you have inherited is the work of the Infrastructure Commission. I want to believe that there is a lot of work that was unfolding, and definitely the anticipation is that the reconfiguration will not affect the progress, precisely by virtue of the emphasis that that was put on the program in terms of our inclusive growth.
growth agenda and also job creating opportunities. But also linked to that is the work that is excellently done by the EPWP, given the target that we have set ourselves of creating 6 million job opportunities. I believe that these are key issues. We also see that we have two presentations, is the property management trading entity and also the department. I think we must just indicate that by 12 we must be done. So therefore, I hope the Deputy Minister's team will be able to take that into consideration. Other than that, let me then hand over to the Deputy Minister. If there's any overview that the Deputy Minister would want to do, no problem. If the Minister is of the view that she's covered, then we will then expect the Deputy Minister to say so. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
Well, thank you, Chair. Given the time constraints, I know I can talk. Let me limit myself and hand over to DG and his team.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and Deputy Minister. As already indicated, Honourable Chair, we've got two presentations, the main vote and PMTE, which means in the light of the time, our colleagues will just speak through the presentation. And then the presentation is going to talk to the department without mainly covering the new functions that we've taken over. The minister and the deputy minister are in a process of listening to branches in the department and ensuring that we bring on board the new functions that we have inherited from EDD and also IDMS. We have not yet finalized with that work. We are still doing the necessary briefings. We have got a committee that is dealing with it with the assistance of the presidency and DPSA. There will be a moment wherein I think the minister and the deputy minister will be able to expand with respect to this function. I will suggest that my colleagues just get into the presentation. We'll start with the DPW one and then also Mr. Maroha will add in terms of the PMT one. Thanks very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, TG. Honourable Chairperson, members of the committee, I'll be taking you through the presentation for the Department of Public Works annual performance plan for 2019-20. The presentation, Chairperson and members of the committee, will be conducted in three parts. We'll give you an overview of the environment in which we operate. We'll then move to the performance indicators underlying our performance plans, and then we'll conclude with a linkage to other plans, such as service delivery improvement and infrastructure plans. We have the Department of Public Works, and this slide particularly contextualizes the DPW as the main department, the main vote, and what we have on the left is the DPW conducting the policy-making functions within the construction and property industries, the expanded public works program, and now also our expanded function to coordinate the delivery of infrastructure in the country. So it very much focuses on infrastructure and policy making together with the expanded public works program. And then we have the arm of the department that owns more than 100 billion worth of land parcels and buildings, and that provides accommodation. And as a specialist business, we operationalize an entity, a trading entity called the Property Management Trading Entity, through which we professionalize service delivery and provision of accommodation, raise revenue for the state, and also achieve cost savings. So that is how the department is structured from a delivery point of view. Moving on to the next slide, we have a program budget structure, which reflects the programs in terms of our budget. And we have two separate budget structures to reflect the plans. And you have the DPW plan reflecting administration. And the other important functions we have in Program 2 is intergovernmental coordination. That is made up of two aspects. It's a professional services branch which deals with training and development and skills development. And we also have the IGR, intergovernmental relations function, in Program 2.
Program 3 reflects the expanded public works program. Program 4 is a policy-making program where we focus on interventions, policy-making interventions to transform the property and construction industries. And finally, we have prestige policy that focuses on policy in relation to our prestige clients as well as the delivery of public events. On my right, chairperson and members of the committee, we have the delivery value chain in essence of our property business. The real estate investment services, this deals with the planning functions and investment analysis and portfolio investment analysis functions of our property business. We have construction project management, real estate management services, which deals with leasing in from the private sector as well as leasing out. And then we have real estate investment and registry services, which is essentially the information part of our business and the asset registration part of the business, which is used from an information point of view to drive and conduct the business. And finally, facilities management, which deals with the maintenance of state-owned buildings. Moving on from there, Chairperson, I just want to give you a few highlights that we are aligning our planning, our budgeting, our implementation and monitoring, in particular in the context of the tight fiscal environment, and that is understood, both the state of the global economy as well as the one in our country. And we've had to reprioritize some of our programs to continue to deliver on our mandate. And of the priorities which inform our plans include both driving employment as well as inequality, improvement of workplace performance, transformation of the property and construction sectors, reindustrialization, supporting black businesses, as well as SMMEs, as well as using our public entities, as well as professional councils. We have six professional councils aligned to the department, is using those as well as agents for change from an economic as well as a transformational point of view. Moving on from there, Chairperson and members of the committee, we have an annual performance plan, and this busy slide, which I won't spend too much of time on, this slide reflects the architecture of the departmental vision and our performance indicators. We have a clear linkage between our performance indicators, the National Development Plan, as well as the medium-term strategic framework, and I'll go to the next slide to explain this, that the department is now in year five. It is closing off the fifth year of a five-year strategic plan in 2019-20, before we go into the next 5 years. And during this period, we are aligning ourselves to MTSF Outcome 4, which is decent employment through inclusive economic growth. And in this regard, we're dealing with sub-outcome 3, spatial imbalances in economic opportunities addressed through public employment schemes, which is the expanded public works program. But we are also linking to MTSF Outcome 5, which is a skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. And in this instance, we're dealing with the various skills programs linked to sub-outcome 3. We also link up to MTSF Outcome 13, an inclusive and responsive social protection system. And in this regard, we're dealing with sub-outcomes 1, 2, and 3 with respect to reformed social welfare sector, early childhood development services, as well as community development interventions. So all of these are linked in terms of the MTSF to our annual performance plan. Moving on from there and looking at SONA commitments, quite naturally our plans are linked to SONA, and the commitments arising out of SONA. We identify new opportunities to expand jobs created through EPWP, improving governance of EPWP, and we'll touch on this. We have certain challenges with respect to governance, defining the roles and responsibilities of implementers and public bodies on the one hand, and the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure on the other, as a coordinator of the program. And of course, we've got structured capacity building programs in place, and from a transformation point of view, we are undertaking a policy review to facilitate socioeconomic transformation within the built environment, and we are undertaking particular reviews on all our legislation in order to develop a new basis going forward. We are also linked to various programs that talk to leveraging procurement spend to advance designated groups. We're supporting the Black Industrialist Program, support for SMMEs, and in specific terms, we are setting aside 30% of all procurement to designated groups. And with respect to our entities and professional councils, we're giving improved attention to governance within those councils and ensuring that they are linked to the broader mandate of the department. Moving on to plan policy initiatives, Chairperson, members of the committee, on the 4th of September, Parliament adopted the report on the expropriation bill following a motion by the chief whip of the majority party. And what we have is that Parliament took a decision to pass the expropriation bill, was rescinded, thereby rejecting the bill in terms of a joint rule. And the redrafted bill 2019 was gazetted for public comment on the 21st of December 2018. And the department is also processing draft public laws general amendment bill, which is repealing various pieces of legislation that are now redundant. As I mentioned earlier, we are reviewing our white papers, one from 1997 that talks to the department and the construction industry. And we are also reviewing all our legislation that talk to our public entities, which is the Council for the Built Environment, the Construction Industry Development Board, and in particular the CIDB, as well as the CBE. Moving on from there, Chairperson, the Independent Development Trust is another public entity linked to the Department of Public Works, and the department operates in terms of a trust deed and is a Schedule 2 entity. And what we're doing currently is we're developing and finalizing a business case for the financial sustainability of the IDT, and we will soon be engaging National Treasury and the DBSA with a view to finalizing this business case and moving the IDT forward as a sustainable organization. Now, moving on to part A of our plan, Chairperson, I just want to dwell on a few of the factors that inform our plan. The external environment is very much influenced by the fact that we have low growth, that we have unchanged government revenue projections, and that has also led to a certain amount of restrictions on us. And given these spending pressures, government is likely to exceed its expenditure ceiling, and these dynamics are expected to continue, which will increase government debt. So this is a tight fiscal environment in which the department is operating. It creates a certain amount of difficulty for us to continue to cut our budgets and yet meet the commitment in terms of our mandate. With respect to the labor market, although unemployment has increased, the rate measured at 27.1% is below the 27.5% at the fourth quarter of the previous year. And this shows that the increase in employment over the year was not enough to cater for the overall increase in the economically active. So what we see is that this particular trend can lead to an understatement in the unemployment rate, as discouraged workers are regarded as not being economically active. With respect to the construction sector, the South Africa's gross fixed capital formation has been at about 20% of the past 5 years, which is low given the growth targets of the National Development Plan, and it's something we'll have to focus on increasingly in future given the infrastructure mandate of the department and the aspiration for the department to lead the country with respect to infrastructure-led growth and job creation. So it's something that will occupy our minds going forward as well. With respect to external factors affecting service delivery, raising employment levels by providing a supporting environment for growth and development, the lack of strong growth has severely limited the capacity of our economy to create jobs needed. And in this particular environment, from a socioeconomic point of view, our EPWP contributes to both short-term social protection as well as long-term socioeconomic development. So this program is for a form of non-contributory social assistance, focusing on providing employment to the unemployed. It's also a form of income transfer to alleviate poverty and limited spread. And through work, infrastructure is also developed so that, as well as services to poor communities. So we have an end product that EPWP is not about filling holes and closing them, as my colleague used the analogy yesterday. From EPWP. It's also to deliver service and deliver sustainable outcome. With respect to transformation within the property and construction sectors, we are driving our transformation agenda, and what we do is we use advocacy and awareness programs within the construction and property industries to achieve this transformation. We also monitor the implementation of empowerment programs in the industry. We also initiate training and capacity building for targeted groups. With respect to skills development, a key strategy in addressing the skills shortage is to restore the skills pipeline through two particular interventions. One is managing the implementation of a built environment skills pipeline throughout the construction sector. And then also we are minimizing over-reliance on consultants from the outside and decreasing expenditure in this regard. So we are keen on expanding the capacity of professional skills within the state. Promoting good governance within the public works sector, members of the committee and chairperson, you would know that public works is a concurrent function, so we can't exactly prescribe provincial departments, so we need to use the Intergovernmental Relations Act to work with them in a collaborative manner, and we do so through a number of governance structures, and we're looking to extend this and strengthen this over the year ahead. With respect to value for money, chairperson, members of the committee, that given the insufficient economic growth and socio-economic transformation, tight alignment of the National Development Plan and our own budget is necessary. This means ensuring our priorities are properly funded and funds are reallocated from non-core and non-performing areas to core and performing areas. We also have the scenario to consider that as we enter our new 5 year cycle.
My indulgence, I just wanted to indicate to the members that tea has arrived, so members, without necessarily disrupting the proceedings, can go in and out just to ensure that they have tea. Over to you. My apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. As we enter the next 5 years, 5 year cycle, and we've commenced with our planning for the next 5 year cycle, given the medium-term strategic framework that Cabinet has introduced subsequent to the hotline, the SONA, where we are facing significant budget cuts of 5%, 6%, and 7% over the medium term. And as we map our strategy, we'll have to look at how we align our mandate to the decreasing purse. And we'll also have to look, and my colleague will deal with it, the sustainability of the PMT and the quality of service we are able to provide with this diminishing budget. With respect to the external environment, Chairperson, we have a young professionals program to fund, to expand this particular program. We are also working with SEPOA, the South African Property Owners Association, and we're also developing as a flagship program, Public Works Academy, to deal with the technical capacitation of professional skills within the environment of the state. From a fraud and corruption point of view, we've conducted a combative anti-corruption strategy in the last 3 to 4 years, and we are focusing more on proactive management of fraud risk going forward. And from a service delivery point of view, we have a service delivery improvement program in place in order to deal with the frontline service delivery. And in the year ahead, and as we approach our new 5-year strategic plan, we are looking at different models and remodeling the organization to deliver more effectively in the face of depleting resources. Chairperson, we have a number of other initiatives in place, like internal policies. We have the National Framework for Technical Capacity Building. We have the Skills Pipeline Program. And in particular, is the Integrity Management Framework. We're looking at aligning to the SONA priorities, as well as to drive ethics as a key consideration of service delivery in the department. So it's quite a serious intervention. And we are also exploring working more closely with the public works sector in introducing a single asset register. Moving on from there, Chairperson, will also have a draft EPWP policy that apart from the ministerial determination and a code of good practice as well as DORA, there's no legal framework to guide EPWP. In the year ahead, we will introduce new regular guidelines in order to introduce greater forms of uniformity within the EPWP environment. So I'll move over from there, Chairperson, and make mention of the fact that as part of our 5-year plan, our policy review in the year ahead is going to be significant as we develop our own understanding of what our new mandate of infrastructure coordination is about and how we use that particular instrument to drive economic growth and job creation, as well as transformation within the construction and property industries. And for these, we are reviewing our white papers that underpin our work. We're reviewing everything on the table, and we hope to come up with something new from a regulatory point of view to drive the public works business going forward. Just to give an overview before we go into the performance indicators, that in our performance environment, these are some of the challenges we face. That there's poor and under-reporting of work opportunities by public bodies. There's poor record-keeping on their part, and there's also non-implementation of projects by public bodies, and these are leading to audit findings that the National Department of Public Works and Infrastructure then has to carry from the Auditor General. We also have the implementation of standard operating procedures to improve audit outcomes going forward, and increasing work opportunities. So our initiatives are intended to mitigate these risks in the year ahead and in our new five-year horizon. We are also looking at reducing fraud and corruption. It's something that we have a zero tolerance for, and our initiatives are heavily geared towards prevention and detection going forward. We are also improving the quality of governance, reduction of irregular expenditure, as well as reduction of litigation against the department. These are important considerations given the losses they cause to our diminishing purse. With respect to demand for services, Chairperson, I want to just reflect that demand for built environment skills is a big driver of our plan, as well as demand for work opportunities through EPWP, given the unemployment, as well as prestige accommodation. So these are the three key areas that drive the demand for services. And in the next slide, Chair, this reflects the skewed patterns we see among our professions. The first slide is talking about number of registered persons, professionals versus candidates. We can see in the engineering, there are many candidates, so we see a good pipeline developing there. And what you see is from a gender point of view that is still skewed in favor of male in all the professions, as well as in particular in the engineers. And similar skewed patterns are also reflected by race and council. The level of skewed representation takes place across all six sectors and is a reflection of the challenges we have with respect to that element of transformation going forward. Chair, I'll go on to the next slide with respect to demand for work opportunities. And I have the five-year targets per sector that in the year ahead, out of the 1 million target, there's about 300,000 in infrastructure, around 200,000 in environmental and culture, social 188,719, and the non-state sector 330,000. To reflect these numbers from a point of view of the various sectors, we have changes that are being effected to our plans, given that EPWP Phase 4 has been approved. So there'd be a certain amount of change taking place here, and we would be amending to comply with the cabinet approval of EPWP Phase 4. With respect to the demand for work opportunities, the non-state sector is reflecting in 1920 at 60,000 in a community works program and non-profit organizations at 270,000, giving a total of 330,000. When I go to demand for prestige accommodation, one can see that reflecting the three categories, state-owned residential, leased, which is office and parking, and state-owned offices and parking, across Pretoria and Cape Town, one can see that with respect to state-owned, the demand is very heavy in Cape Town, and that the leased accommodation in Pretoria is quite heavy. And with respect to the MTF requirements over the next 3 years, the demand for services across the prestige environment is growing incrementally as we move forward. As I go to the organizational environment, Chairperson, members of the committee, I want to reflect that all of these considerations then underpin what we plan for in the year ahead. We address the gaps, and we address our environment, and we create our performance indicators accordingly. But this is our budget for the year 2019-20 in particular, and the Department of Public Works has a total budget appropriated of 7.8 billion rand, a bulk of which is the Extended Public Works Program at 2.5 billion and a policy branch, which is called Property and Construction Industry Policy and Research at 4.2 billion. But these are mainly in the form of transfers, as we'll reflect later in the next slide, that EPWP has got transfers and subsidies worth 1.5 billion rand, and the department agencies and accounts, which is transferred from our policy branch, is almost 4.2 billion rand. So the bulk of the budget of the Department of Public Works is in the form of transfers to other entities. So, Chairperson, with that background of the budget, I move on to Part B, which is the program performance indicators, and I move on to Program 1. The first program performance indicators, the indicator talks to initiatives undertaken to accelerate the transformation agenda in the department. This is driven by the gender unit within the Office of the Director General. In the year ahead, they're targeting 36 such initiatives, which includes advocacy programs, stakeholder and capacity building engagements. Program indicator number 2 is MPAC, the Management Performance Assessment Tool, which looks at strategic management, financial management, human resource management, and governance, compliance, and risk management. And Chairperson, as you can see, over the years we've improved our score. 3 to 4 years ago, we considered ourselves an embarrassment, and at the moment we're targeting a full score at the end of March 2020. In the current year, we've achieved about between 65 and 70%. So we're on an upward trend with respect to governance processes. Item number three, indicator number three, is investigations initiated within 30 days, and this is part of our prevention strategy. We will initiate all investigations within 30 days of validation. Four is interventions recommended. This is also talking to our prevention strategy. Each year, we look at two major areas of our business, and we unpack it thoroughly from head to toe. In the current year, we're working on our leasing in environment as well as prestige. And these two areas, we are looking at all the fundamental weaknesses that were identified in our risk identification processes, as well as by the SIU and the anti-corruption unit, and we're plugging all the holes. So that is talking to prevention. We have two major initiatives per year. Item number five is irregular expenditure. In 2014-15, Chairperson, we undertook a major process of identifying irregular expenditure in the past and taking steps to both prevent it as well as hold individuals and others to account. And what we have is a program over the last 3 to 4 years, which is now concluding, to reduce the irregular expenditure baseline to zero. I believe we already achieved that target. And in the current period, we're no longer incurring irregular expenditure. Item number six is compliance in 30 days. We have 100% compliance of payments in 30 days. We have a system called Ria Patala in the department to track invoices and to ensure payment in 30 days. We do have exceptions, but we've made considerable improvement in that regard. With respect to SCM, we are improving our SCM processes, and we have a target of 75 and 90% respectively for bids and quotations to be awarded within prescribed time periods. It's 56 days for bids, which is tenders, and 30 days for quotations. So we, given that we are a procurement-driven department, those efficiencies are contemplated. Then with respect from an empowerment point of view, the percentage of bids awarded to designated groups is targeted at 80%, and the percentage of spend as well in rand value is also 80%. So it's not just the number of bids, but also the rand value of the spend to designated groups is targeted at 80% in the year ahead. And we're filling vacancies within 6 months of advertisement. That's a DPSA standard, and we are targeting 100% within the prescribed period. And a year ahead, we are implementing IT modules, and target number 12 and target number 13 reflecting those. These are our IT systems to support the PMTE, in fact. And then also, we are contemplating implementing an ERP system right across the public works sector. With respect to target 15, we are establishing a target of 100% of all reported fraud and corruption cases must be subjected to disciplinary hearings, and 100% of default judgments against the department must be prevented, given the history of default judgments having been incurred in the past. Chairperson, that's the administration part of the Department of Public Works. I will skip all the quarterly target slides in favor of time and move on to program number two. And the budget, we have the budget for program one. This reflecting, based on those performance indicators, the budget for program one is 500 million rands. And the economic classification is reflected on the slide thereafter. It's primarily in goods and services and compensation, given the nature of administration. Program two. Chairperson, members of the committee, we have two branches in Program 2. The first branch is a professional services branch looking mainly at skills in the built environment, and the second branch is our intergovernmental coordination function. The performance indicators in this program are as follows. The number of performance review reports of the sector, we're targeting two performance review reports in the sector where we operate, mainly to the IGR Act. Number two, we have a number of agreements signed for joint service delivery. We have 15 agreements signed in this way, And Chair, it would seem a trivial matter, but we operate on the basis of cooperation. So this reflects the extent of cooperation that is beginning to emerge in the public works sector that operates mainly to the IGR Act and consensus. Number three is the number of reviews conducted on IGR structures. We are conducting one such review in the year ahead. And then moving on to our second branch, which is the professional services branch in program two. Target number four is 1,212 beneficiaries will participate in various DPW skills development programs. These include young professionals, interns, learnerships, trainees, artisans, as well as a bursary program. Target number five is provinces with state building capacity programs in the built environment address and align to the skills pipeline program. We are targeting to align three provinces in the year ahead. And then target number six is the number of schools program participants enrolled for built environment qualification. We are targeting 40 schools, and also with respect to a bursary scheme with beneficiaries with completed built environment qualifications, we are targeting 40 such beneficiaries in the year ahead. And then as a Fletcher program, we are establishing a National Department of Public Works Academy in the year ahead, and in 2019-20 we'll see the launch of this academy. And the academy is being established in response to the decline in both the quantity and quality of built environment skills at the disposal of the state, and the increasing reliance placed on importing those from the private sector. So this is an important initiative in the year ahead that we have just commenced with, and which we will launch in 2019-20. The budget for this program, two, is 61 million, under 61 million, and is made up mainly, as the slide that follows reflects, in compensation of employees, and to a lesser extent, goods and services. Then, Chairperson, I move on to program number three, which is the Expanded Public Works Program. And Expanded Public Works Program is one in which we coordinate the national program through the national department, but the contributors is every public body as well as the non-state sector. So it's a national program in which everybody participates. And the first target is the number of work opportunities reported on the reporting system, and in the year ahead is 991,792 opportunities. This has been amended by the cabinet adoption of EPWP Phase 4. It's about 10,000 less. It's around 981,000 work opportunities now. Target number two is percentage of EPWP participation among designated groups. It's linked to the first target, but in terms of the 980,000 work opportunities for 1920, 55% should be youth, 55% women, and 2% persons with disabilities. I believe EPWP Phase 4 is also going to move these targets to 60% youth and 60% women, and we will now have to align to that going forward. Number three is the data quality assessment reports produced. EPWP assesses, it conducts data quality assessments. It's the biggest challenge they face as EPWP. It's the quality of information received from public bodies is often not credible. It does not reflect work opportunities actually created, the duplication in the system, and they have all sorts of challenges. So the data quality assessment is intended to respond to this particular challenge. Then target number four is number of contracted non-profit organizations to implement the non-state sector, and the EPWP will support 350 non-profit organizations in 2019-20 with respect to implementation of EPWP, and also support 290 public bodies with technical support. This is the technical support is crucial to ensure that the right projects are selected for EPWP, that they have potential for labor-intensive job creation, that community assets are created, and that the program has systems in place to ensure that only credible work opportunities are in fact reported, and to limit as well mismanagement of the program. Moving on from there is the number of frameworks on sector convergence approved. This is the one we reflected in our understanding or reflection of the external environment, that EPWP is a national program and we need some kind of uniformity and convergence. Last year we issued a standard on recruitment to ensure that we remind all the public bodies how recruitment will be undertaken, that it needs to be a fair process, that everybody must be given a fair opportunity and what the guidelines are to follow to ensure the integrity of the program. So this year we will come up with another one of uniformity with respect to this particular category of EPWP. So, Chairperson, moving on to the budget of EPWP is 2.7 billion rands, of which the infrastructure and operations are taking up the bulk of 1.2 billion rand each. And if I move forward from there in terms of an economic classification, the economic classification reflects the transfers from EPWP to provinces and municipalities in terms of various grants is 1.5 billion rands, and to non-profit institutions, 720 million rands. So that's a reflection, and EPWP, the bulk of their budget, is providing support to the public bodies and conducting the coordination function, and a large part is in terms of incentive grants to various provincial departments, as well as municipalities and participants in the non-state sector. Moving on to Program 4, Program 4 is what we call a policy environment. In the year ahead, we will have developed a public works bill. In 2019-20, we're targeting a draft public works white paper submitted at least to the Minister for Parliamentary Processes. So we have that particular target on the journey towards the bill at some point. Then we also have a CIDB amendment bill and a CBE amendment bill, as well as amendment bill for the 6th Built Environment Professional Council. So this is a review of all the legislation in the department, chambers, chairperson, and members of the committee. The last one is the professional councils. I want to just reflect on them. If I remember all six, is the engineers, the architects, landscape architects, the valuers, construction project managers, as well as land surveyors. So everything that is within the purview of the department, from a legislative point of view, is being removed, is being reviewed at least. The presumption is that the legislation is not entirely aligned to what we require these entities to be doing. The budget for the policy branch is 4.4 billion rand, and where we can see on that particular slide, are we stuck with the slide? Sorry? I see. The reflection is that property management training entities are going to receive 4.2 billion rand from the transfers from the department, and my colleague, Mr. Maroja, will reflect on where that 4.2 billion rand fits in to the PMTE. Moving on to Program 5, Prestige Policy. Chairperson and members of the committee, here at DPW, the prestige is dealing with norms and standards on what we deliver to prestige clients, which is the legislature, the judiciary, and the executive as well. It's dealing with the norms and standards, so we have a proper appreciation of what can be done and what is to be expected and what not. And then the PMT actually does the delivery of most of our prestige projects. So my colleague will also talk to delivery there, and I'll stick to policy. And in the year ahead, the prestige policies, we are planning to approve 2 policies in the year ahead. We are also planning to support 8 state events, such as SONA and the opening of Parliament, etc. And then also we will deliver movable assets to our prestige clients within 60 days with a target of 85% so delivered. And also, from a planning point of view, a better understanding of prestige needs and requirements, we will develop work lists for all prestige areas of business in the year ahead. Prestige budget is 115 million. And most of it is with respect to accommodation and state functions. We also have a 10 million transfer to the Parliamentary Villages Management Board. Chair, concluding on part C, which is really our links to other plans, we are linked to a service delivery improvement plan. In EPWP, EPWP is focusing heavily on recruitment guidelines and processes. This is what affects people and citizens and service beneficiaries. They are undertaking awareness campaigns to ensure that recruitment processes in EPWP is fair and everybody who is entitled to have access to it does have access to EPWP work opportunities. And EPWP is conducting awareness campaigns in this regard on the basis of the guideline for recruitment. With respect to prestige, and this area focuses on frontline service delivery, how are we interacting with service beneficiaries? What we are doing in Prestige, they are looking to improve the ratio of the managers in Prestige as against the number of their clients. They are introducing more client relationship management people, so they are able to respond more efficiently to Prestige needs. They are also developing a complaints management system, which is a requirement of a service delivery program, as well as conducting condition assessments across all prestige clients so they can better understand your needs. With respect to our policy branch, From a point of view of frontline service delivery, we have a very important instrument called a property management empowerment policy. And our prestige branch is conducting research to understand how this empowerment policy is affecting all the intended beneficiaries so that we receive feedback and we can take a different direction if so required. In our SCM environment, we've introduced the National Bid Adjudication Committee for Infrastructure Procurement as our lead initiative in that regard to achieve greater value for money as well as transparency. And what we're doing here with this National Bid Adjudication Committee, this committee will engage bidders so that we amend the terms of a bid even after an award, where we find that there's room for negotiation to achieve better value for money for the state and a better terms and arrangements for both parties. And what we're also introducing is a transparency system in procurement where members of the public will be given an opportunity to observe how bids and tenders are awarded. With respect to our strategic risk chairperson, we are required to identify the uncertainties that confront the organization as we move forward and to confront those uncertainties upfront. I think I used the word front too many times, but the point being that we need to mitigate our risks before they emerge, and we need to identify them in advance. And the first one is essentially the inadequate service delivery, especially in our accommodation function, that you often have with respect to our accommodation. The level of service delivery isn't what it ought to be, and clients often want to find other ways and means to acquire their accommodation. So this inadequate service delivery is leading to somewhat of an erosion of our mandate. But given the fact that we have an infrastructure responsibility going forward, we will review this particular risk given the expansion effect of our mandate. With respect to compliance risk, which is what risk number two is, there's an inverse relationship between audit outcomes, level of fraud and quality of service delivery and compliance. And we have found over the years an improvement in our audit outcomes. However, we have had adverse audit outcomes. We have adverse levels of fraud and corruption and adverse levels of compliance. And we have a strategic risk, a compliance risk in the organization, which we have to mitigate. Given the limitation on resources, it becomes difficult to mitigate these. But these are some of the interventions we are undertaking. We intending to implement our compliance risk management function and also introduce an ethics framework in the department. With respect to risk number three, there's a non-alignment of service delivery imperatives across the public works sector, including our public works entities, where it would appear that in certain respects we are operating in different directions. Our public entities in a particular direction and the public works sector, the provincial department in another, and there's a need for a greater alignment here. And this this talks to a review of the framework of oversight of our public entities. We need greater oversight with them. In fact, we are undertaking an opportunity at present that as we plan for the 5 years ahead of us, they are very involved in our planning processes. They don't plan on their own. They've got to plan as part of our family. We also have a greater level of concurrence within our IGR structures and also share all the compacts with our public entities to ensure greater convergence. Then risk number four, chairperson, is what keeps us all awake at night. In fact, they all do, all our risks. It's the untransformed built environment disciplines in construction and property industries. This is the most difficult one, is that we seek to achieve transformation, and transformation isn't only about the numbers. It's about everything else, creating more opportunities and spreading them across, creating and expanding the construction sector to achieve growth targets and job targets. So the transformation is quite a broad subject, and in many respects, we believe that we are underachieving, and this we consider a strategic risk, and we need to use our policy direction in the organization to drive greater levels of transformation, and hence you've seen our earlier interventions of a review of our public works legislation to determine where we can bring about change over the year ahead, and in particular the period ahead. And one of the big initiatives we have is to work more closely with the sector charter councils, to work more closely with the public works sector, and to also refresh our white papers and legislation in this regard. And then finally, Chair, from a DPW point of view, the credibility of the Expanded Public Works Program, this is not a reality, this is a risk which we mitigate. It says credibility of EPWP is being eroded due to non-adherence to EPWP prescripts. That EPWP being a national program, you have a certain level of mismanagement, fraud and corruption, favoritism, And also the reporting, which is a big challenge. The reporting very often does not report work opportunities credibly. Work opportunities sometimes are not complete, that it is underreported. Sometimes it's overreported. These are challenges inherent in a national program, and this is one of the strategic risks that we seek to mitigate through our EPWP program. And in the year ahead, we are developing a consolidated legislative framework. So from a legal point of view, you could perhaps lose your grants as a municipality if you are found wanting in this regard. So we're looking at tightening all of the gaps and closing the loopholes in this regard. But it's something that we are working towards. Chairperson, just for information of the committee, these are the conditional grants. We have these four grants which flow through the department, the EPWP Integrated Grant for Provinces. This to incentivize provinces to increase labor-intensive employment through programs that maximize job creation and skills development, as encapsulated in the EPWP principles. And the EPWP Integrated Grant to Municipalities is the same as I've explained for provinces, except to municipalities. And then you also have a social sector grant for provinces, is to incentivize the provincial social sector departments to increase job creation. And they also focus on strengthening and extending social service programs that have employment potential. And then finally, we have the EPWP incentive for the non-state sector wage subsidy, and this is to increase job creation through the expansion of the non-state sector EPWP program. So those are the four main incentives we use in the provinces and municipalities, as well as non-state sector to drive EPWP programs within those sectors. And then finally, Chairperson, these are our public entities. We have four public entities. The Construction Industry Development Board, they have a dual role. Theirs is to effect development and regulation in the construction industry. We have the Council for the Built Environment. The Council for the Built Environment is linked to the Green Bloc on the right. They conduct oversight over the built environment professional councils. Then we have the IDT, which delivers social infrastructure, schools and ports, clinics as well, and is linked to the department. They are Schedule 2 public entity operating on the mandate of a trust deed, and they also have a very colorful history. The Agrima South Africa is similar in many terms to the South African Bureau of Standards, that they certify, like the Bureau of Standards do, except they certify what one could call construction systems and construction products that are non-standardized, that you wouldn't ordinarily come across in a South African Bureau of Standards environment. Then moving to the right, we have the six Bulk Environment Professional Councils, the Council for the Property Valuers Profession, the Engineering Council of South Africa, the Council for the Architectural Profession, the Council for the Quantity Surveying Profession, the South African Landscape Architectural Professions, which is very much small and growing, the South African Council for Project and Construction Management Profession. So those are the six councils that are linked to us. Perhaps there are other councils that ought to be linked to us that are not there in other departments. But one thing that characterizes these councils is the fact that they have many different loyalties and responsibilities. We expect them to effect transformation in terms of our own national development plan. But they often have loyalty to their various constituents, as you would expect from the professional councils and professions, that they have multiple loyalties that fall outside of some of the goals that we have as a state. So, Chairperson, on that note, I conclude the DPW APP for 2019-20 and I hand over to my colleague to take you to the PMT part. Thank you.
The Chairperson, dear members and colleagues, I've got 80-something-odd slides to present. I'm not going to go through all of them. What I will do, Chairperson, is I'll go through a few context points, particularly just to emphasize the difference between the department and the property management trading entity, and a few issues there. Then I'll pick up from the background. I think my colleague has done, a good job in giving the background. And when you look at the background to the APPs, there are many similarities which don't need to be repeated. I'll just pick up on a few issues that may be slightly unique to the PMTE. So for the benefit of, I think, new members who are exposed to the department for the first time, there will always be confusion about there's the main vote and there's the PMTE. What are the differences? So the PMTE, which is, stands for the Property Management Trading Entity, it's a concept that comes far. I think in 1997, the Public Works policy document talked to the need to separate the policy part of the department and the operations part of the department. The recognition there was that the size and complexity of the property property portfolio of the state may require a special vehicle to take care of it, both from a capacitation, a financing, and just to be able to have the right skills to do this portfolio. And over time, in 2006, a trading entity was approved as an interim structure by National Treasury and Cabinet. It was only fully institutionalized in 2011-2012. So that is the PMT, and the difference between the PMT and the department is that the PMT resides within the department, but it ring-fences the key operations of the department from a technical perspective. That's really the key issue. It reports to the same accounting officer. It reports to the same executive authority. So that's the context. The other context point I would like to also make, Chairperson, about the PMT and the department. Clearly, we provide accommodation for the state. One, for the state to do its business, but also for the state to deliver services to the citizens. So we are in the value chain of service delivery for government. That's the first part and the most important part of public works. The second part, which is now the new role that has been envisaged with the macro organization, is this whole issue of recognizing infrastructure development as a stimulus for the economy, and it comes with the coordination of infrastructure development coordination, which is a new role which came with the macro organization that I think the Minister DM has indicated we are in the process of understanding what it means and how it's going to impact the department. So with that context, I would like to go to slide 15 to talk to slide 14, just to talk to the unique issues that were not covered by my colleague, which are unique to the PMTE. This relates to business improvement initiatives within the PMTE. The first one talks to the operation of the PMTE. This is the establishment of the PMTE and what are the key issues that we're focusing on in that program. One A is the operationalization and financial sustainability of the PMTE, and there's a program in PMT looking at that. It talks to all steps that are required to institutionalize and bring forth financial sustainability measures for the PMTE. B, we're looking at the business process review, looking at the entire value chain of the PMTE to standardize the business processes and re-engineer and improve those that needs to be improved. C is to look at what is called the user charge model. We provide accommodation for clients. We receive rent from our clients. So we are now computing or conceptualizing a scientific method to calculate this rental that our clients should pay. We call it the user charge model, so that from bottom up, we can actually make visible what is the real cost of the services and make sure that we charge the clients the right kind of rentals. D is itemized billing. Currently, when we bill our clients, it's a lump sum, it's not itemized, and clients want to know in the bill that we are receiving what are the items, and we're doing that for our clients. Of course, we're starting with a few clients, and over time we'll go to all of our clients. E, we are to reduce the PMP's bank overdraft. The trading entity operates under the rules of National Treasury. And one of the key rules is that as a trading entity, you must balance your books, your cost and your expenditure and your income must balance. So we shouldn't operate an overdraft. But currently we have an overdraft, and it's hovering about 2.5 billion. And the reduction of such an overdraft is important in terms of our compliance with a National Treasury regulation. Audit improvement plan. And when we come to present our annual report, including the AG's audit report, you'll see a difference between the audit outcomes of the main vote, which is separated from the PMTE. In the PMTE, the major audit issues that arise out of the higher standard of accounting that's required for the trading entity, and we are dealing with those, and mostly they relate to how we value our assets, which is a requirement of the accounting standard that we apply. Business system improvement, this mainly is the implementation of automation around the business system using IT and IT platform. Those are that's the number one and number a key business improvement initiative around the establishment of the PMTE. I will not go through the rest, but those are, I think, the key ones that I wanted to highlight. Now I'll go to each program and talk to each program in turn. But before I go there, maybe let's go to slide 22. Slide 22 and slide 23 indicate the needs from our key clients, both in terms of new space and new lease requirement. On a new space, we've highlighted how many square meters are required by each of the key clients over the medium term, and you could see the South African police, defense, justice, correctional services are our four biggest clients in terms of both current accommodation requirements and future needs. When you go to slide 23, it looks to the demand for new spaces that we need to lease, and those statistics are highlighted there in terms of in the next 3 years what our clients require. Then I'll then go to the individual programs. Firstly, on slide number 34, starting with administration. Administration talks to the SCM targets and the finance targets, and some of the targets have been highlighted in the main vote. They are similar in here. The 30-day payment is one that is similar. But number two, which is the number of new revenue generation sources incubated, this is where we begin to attempt to look at new money for the portfolio. The part of the formation of the PMTE is that the PMTE is supposed to look at business possibilities in the portfolio and leverage the portfolio to get income streams. And that's the target that looks at the revenue generation. So that's the program one, and there is this KPI 4, which has been already articulated in the previous presentation around percentage of bids awarded within 56 working days. It's similar. Percentage of quotation awarded within 30 days also similar. So I will not go through all of the KPIs. They are articulated there, but they relate to SCM and finance. So I'll then go to the next program, which is articulated in page 42. And I'll highlight what this program seeks to do and what are the key issues in this program. This is real estate investment services. For every investment that we make, for every disposal that we make, this is the division or the branch that does the analysis of all the investment parameters. It also has to respond to the customer, the client needs with the customer, the client user management programs. So it's both investment response to clients, and also key to this division is the whole issue of responding to the land issues. How we identify land for disposal, for socio-economic development, for restitution, and for special transformation. This is the branch that focus on the identification, the processes to deal with land matters. Also, this is the program that looks at the development of government precincts. We are looking at in rural towns, how we consolidate accommodation for the state, that services for the state can be located in one area, that when citizens come to receive services, they can go to one place, either for, you know, for courts, for home affairs, for labor issues, it can be consolidated in one area. But part of that is also begin to bring special development and transformation so that we can, on the basis of government accommodation, you could actually begin to trigger development in rural towns and rural areas. So this is part of that plan. So I'll then go to program 3, which is construction project management. Within the department, within PMTE, we execute projects for our own needs and for the needs of the client. In totality, we've got active projects which are about 3,000 of them at a given point. The value of that is about 26 billion of active projects that we execute. And in the notion of using infrastructure development for economic stimulus, this is the area, or this is the divisions that will play a key role in contributing to infrastructure development. I think what we are seeing when we look at the trend of projects that we've been executing in previous years and what we are claiming, there's been a reduction. And that comes from what we are seeing, that client budget in terms of projects is reducing and is impacting on our portfolio of projects that we need to execute in the next coming year. So I'm not going to go into each one, but this is just to indicate what this division score mandate is. So I'll go then to program 4, which is real estate management services, and I'll highlight what its main outputs are, and also indicate some of the implications for this program. In this program, this is where we acquire leases from private landlord. Currently, we have a portfolio of leases in the tune of about 2,500-600 leases, for which we pay in the order of 4.5 billion per annum. The idea, obviously, is to reduce what we lease, to increase what the government properties that our client use. But currently, we have that portfolio. The biggest issue in the current period has been the renewal of those leases, because most of them had lapsed. But in the past, particularly past 12 months, there's been a big effort to renew the leases that have lapsed, because if we have leases that don't have valid contracts, they expose client departments to irregular expenditure and in some cases very expensive leases because they are on a short-term basis. So the idea here is to renew those leases. But also there is a cabinet decision to reduce leases for security cluster clients. For instance, I mean, it is not desirable to have a police station that you lease. It is not desirable to have a defense facility that you lease because of the security sensitivity. But currently there is a lease portfolio in the security cluster, but there's a thing that we need to reduce, and this is where this division makes a contribution. Then I'll go to program 5, which is the real estate information and registry services. This is the division that is accountable for our asset register. The rebuild of our asset register have been going on for a while, and we are at a point where I think we have made significant progress, where we have now an auditable asset register. For the past 3 years, we've been able to put in front of the AG an auditable asset register, and for many aspects, the AG has confirmed what we have. But there's one part which is a challenge, which is the valuation. And when we come back to talk about the annual report and annual and the audit, that part is the thing that we'll talk to. But over the 3 years, we've made significant progress in managing that aspect, and we will discuss it when we come to annual report and present annual report to the committee. Then I'll go to Program 6, Facilities Management. By and large, Facilities Management talks to the experience of our clients. This is the division that manages the maintenance and operations of our facilities. And where clients have issues, it's normally in this area where, you know, facilities are in disrepair, the maintenance reaction time is long, so this is a big issue. And we need to acknowledge up front, and I just need to bring some context issue here, which talks to this area. In 2017, Chairperson, the South African Institute of Civil Engineers did what is called an infrastructure report card for public works sector in the country. And it gave a rating, a 5-point rating, A being world class, D being, I mean, you know, I'm not going to go through all of them, but it's from A to E. We were given as a public sector, a public works sector, a D rating, and that D rating says facilities are at risk of failure. So this is across provinces, national, and this talks to the state of the repair of our assets, and is indicative of the challenges that our clients are having. But here in reaction, we're beginning to look at proactive maintenance strategies, also looking at making sure that the funding requirement for maintenance is visible to National Treasury, because that's a big issue in terms of the right level of funding for the maintenance of the property, the portfolio of the state. And in this regard, we also sponsored a cabinet memo to talk to this thing of maintenance and to talk to the issues that we need to drive to bring this to the right level. So this is the branch that looks after that, and it's a big effort to look at maintenance. Also in this branch program and division, we're looking at resource preservation. We're focusing on electricity, we're focusing on water reduction, and we're looking at the entire portfolio to reduce those aspects. So it is embedded in this program. In Part C, we highlight the long-term infrastructure plan. I will not go through in the detail, but it's aligned in terms of the categories and the various costs associated with it in the medium term. Then I will then end with the risks that we are managing for the PMTE. In slide 82, we talk to the first risk: inadequate service delivery leading to the erosion of the department's mandate. And I think that is self-evident in terms of the state of repair of our portfolio, but there are a series of actions that we are undertaking to deal with the risk. It goes into slide 83, slide 84, and slide 85. And in slide 86, we talk to what I've just talked to, inadequate maintenance and safeguarding of state assets. And there is a big issue here. I just need to maybe to take one program in terms of the response to the issue of maintenance. We've got 90,000 facilities, and we are responsible for maintenance for those facilities. But 3 years ago, we developed a top 300 program. The idea here is identifying the top key facilities in terms of service delivery of the state, and in there begin to introduce advanced maintenance programs to deal and with the performance of those facilities. And once we have conceptualized that program, this is then will be the basis through which facilities management is done across the entire portfolio of the state. So over time, then it will be rolled out in the entire program of the state. So that's just the one area I wanted to highlight. And then on page 88, strategic risk number 3, inadequate delivery of national government priorities. And in there, there's a series of actions that we're undertaking. Key among them is also we have now have a green building policy that talks to how we respond to the green issues as a government department accountable for facilities of the state and also as a regulator of the built environment. Strategic risk number 4, weakening financial viability and sustainability of the PMTE. I may highlight a few things here in terms of the financial sustainability of the PMTE. First of all is to say, part of the work of PMTE is to calculate the true cost of managing state property. So for that, we actually developed a financial model so that we can empirically say, to be able to run this portfolio, what should happen from a finance point of view. I've already talked about generating new revenue for the state, but also the other dynamics that I think for the committee should be aware of. That is state-to-state business. 100% of our business is state, so we get our revenue from other departments. What we discover is that the ability or the willingness to pay another state department compared to the state paying a private sector actor, entity is different. When you look at leases, for instance, there's very little debtors or money owed to private leaseholds, because if you owe them within months, they lock you out. But for us, we find that we've got outstanding debt that goes for years, but we do not have the means to lock out our own clients, because it's government to government. You can't go and lock out parliament. You can't go and lock out a court. So that actually creates problems in terms of revenue collection, and we'll see when we talk to the annual report, the issue of an increasing debtor book and outstanding debt is a big issue. But its impact on the issue of the financial sustainability. We've elevated to DM and Minister, and Minister has undertaken to talk to the top clients that are owing us money to improve this area. We are talking to National Treasury so that they can start ring-fencing money for our rent, so that money that is earmarked by clients to us doesn't go to other priorities of clients.
Thank you.
Okay.
I want to give members sufficient time to engage.
Thank you. I think that was my last point. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gigi and the team, led by the Deputy Minister. You excused the chief. Honourable members, I will invite your engagement from yourselves. We'll start Mr. Donga and proceed along the line. And then from there we'll then give over to the team to respond. Can you just switch off your mic, Mr. Donga?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. A question to the department. Now, of course, you're a new department, but I think in the AG's words, you walk into dead men's shoes. You take it over. So you're responsible. Doesn't matter if you knew, you have walked into dead men's shoes. The one question is, I don't understand what prestige clients mean. It's an issue that I think we need to unpack. I mean, what is a prestige client? And what is a non-prestige client if all your clients are the state? That's one. Two is, I want to talk about something that is always a problem with the Auditor General, which is the question of assets in any department. And particularly the assets prior to 1994 and in the period between 1994 when the change took over, of assets that are no longer there. I'm talking about paintings in some buildings. Has that actually been resolved now? I've been away for a while, so I don't know. Has that issue been resolved? Because some of those paintings could be expensive. It's artwork throughout. Let me limit it there and leave it to other members.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, there is so much that I'm sure we will get to grips with it all over time. Chair, the first thing that occurs to me this morning is that we're talking about these numerous references in both presentations to how tight the physical environment, the fiscal environment is, and how tight the budget is. But can I point out to you that you have 19 members of your delegation today? 19 members, and I'm pretty sure that the colleagues in the front are the ones who are going to speak today. Please reflect on that, Chair. It is not necessary. This is like correctional services. They run with 40 people. It's absolutely unnecessary to run with 19 people in delegation and then complain that the fiscal environment is tight. Really, I think you need to reflect on that. Around 2014, 2015, former Deputy Minister Cronin advised that DPW was just completing a PwC audit of all immovable property assets of your entity and I suppose DPW as well. I never received any confirmation that that had been done, and you refer on page 66 in your presentation that it's now, you use the word auditable. So I'm assuming you're referring to, you now know how many properties you have, now you can assign the values to them, is that correct? Can you just comment on that? What does auditable mean? Because it would be very concerning if 5 years down the line we're no closer to knowing what you own. The other thing I wanted to ask about was, around the same time, Deputy Minister Cronin advised that 350,000 Literally, that's the figure. 350,000 instances of irregular expenditure had been discovered in the department. And SCOPA asked repeatedly for an updated list of what had happened to the peoples involved in 350,000 incidences of irregular expenditure, what had happened to them. Now, you put very lofty ideals in your presentation about how you're going to cut down on, I think you're being very, 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 very ambitious to say you'll have 100% reduction, you'll have no irregular expenditure. I'll be amazed to see that. Any department anywhere in the world to get that right. And then you also have lofty ideals about how you're going to proceed with disciplinaries. So let me put you to the test. You must be familiar with that figure, 350,000, and if you're not, I can give you the detail. What's happened to those? Then you speak about the intergovernmental relationships relating to various projects being undertaken around the country. And also you speak very aggressively about the transformation mandate of the department. And we all understand that. But what are you as a department going to do about the various, and I'll use inverted commas here, business forums that pop up all around the country and bedevil our municipalities, our provincial departments, where they're trying to get work, and literally these mafia groups pop up. They're not in anybody's database. No one's ever heard of them. And they say that they're the local business forum. I'm sure everyone in this room knows what I'm talking about. We're the local business forum and we'd like 10% of the contract. Now this directly impacts the work that DPW are doing. When is EPWP going to take definitive action to root that out? And have an intergovernmental relationship with the SAPS to say that when we're busy on a project somewhere and literally these mafia thugs arrive and stop projects and threaten the contractors on site, that SAPS will move in there with extreme prejudice and sort this out. Because it is slowing down work around the country flat out. And it's slowing down your work. It's also affecting EPWP employees because they are being chased off site. They're being threatened with their lives. That is something that we've got to take very seriously. As I said, Chair, there's so much. I take it now with this tough fiscal environment that we're not moving Parliament to Pretoria. Okay, I would imagine that's not going to happen due to the cost. And then my final question is, I'd really would like, and maybe you, if you say we can go into it in greater detail further down the line, that's fine. But the talk of the transformation mandate that you have in terms of the construction industry would be of great concern to the construction industry and CRDB, etc., 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 simply in terms of knowing what you're talking about. And are you talking about companies that you're going to do business with, or because I see you have authority over a whole lot of regulatory bodies? That's the one question, the transformation charter. And then the other thing is about the energy challenge that we have in South Africa. If you're involved in the built environment and the construction industry, does the department have any ideas or policy proposals about how going forward we're going to regulate in the industry the inclusion of green initiatives? For instance, every house that gets built must have a solar panel, must have the right lighting in the house, must have an ability to harvest water, etc., etc., etc. And we make that a standard package. When you build a house from new, it has to have that. Chair, I'll leave it at that. Finally, just one thing is the gym has been built in Acacia Park, but we can't lift weights yet. Whose job is that? Is that yours or is that Parliament's job? Because I know for myself I need to get fit again, you see. Okay, so now just that's just a light aside. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. At the end, we have this advantage as a select committee, because we deal with a number of departments
and not only one department. And also we tend to make a comparison as well on what other departments are doing and what the department is doing. Because we also move from the understanding that there's a framework that is used for all the departments in terms of reporting. But when you see that others are not reporting on some of the issues, let me just make an example in terms of what is not in the KPI under, for example, administration. The one is a target or the KPI on the issue of the audit. Whether the department, in terms of its plans, what is it aiming at in terms of audit outcome, clean audit and such things. There's nothing. I'm raising this issue because of I've been with the department in the past, as the chair was indicating. One of the reasons the department was able to get a clean audit or unqualified audit, just can't remember what it was, clean or unqualified with the emphasis, was because of this PMTE that was taken out of a department and became a standalone trading entity. But the PMT itself was not getting an unqualified audit, if I remember correctly. It was getting qualified, meaning that if it was still in the DPW, if DPW itself would have not got the clean audit or unqualified audit. But both the DPW and the PMTE, there's no target with regard to the audit. So I don't know whether you're covering for PMTE, so you thought that you should also not put a target on the audit. But also with regard to the vacancy rate, there's nothing on the vacancy rate in terms of the KPI. Also the percentage of women employed in senior management positions, there's no target with regard to that. And also there's no target with regard to or performance indicator with regard to people with disability. So we won't be able to do our oversight with regard to those areas. I just wanted to raise those issues. The issue that was also raised, but it was raised in another committee that relates to the EPWPs, in relation with regard to or in relation to the minimum wage. We know that there's a National Minimum Wage Commission that is going to consider increase with regard to the minimum wage. Currently it's 20 rand and also 15 rand for domestic workers, 11 rand for public EPWPs. What would then be your stance if that National Minimum Commission raises the 11? Are you prepared for that in terms of your budget? Just also to indicate that DDG, when you were taking us through the report, DPW report, you, every time you end the one program, you'll indicate how much, and you don't have that slide. In terms of, for example, you said program one, you go on in terms of the performance indicators, but then you say program one, the budget is so much, and then you get to the next program, you go on. With regard to the performance indicators, and then you say the budget is so much, and we don't have that information before us. So it's different with the PMTE. They've got those slides. But also in relation to the EPWPs, you said that you're going to develop a policy. But you didn't tell us generally what are the challenges with regard to the issues of coordination and issues of implementation. I just, you know, when you drive around, especially in areas where we are deployed, you find that some of the EPWP workers just sitting under the trees and sleeping. You don't, you know, in various areas. And so I don't know who is responsible for supervision of if it, maybe this policy will be able to address such things. I don't know. The one issue also want to, now that you have this, your mandate has been extended to include the infrastructure, and then there are processes that you were referring to. What does it mean then for us in terms of doing oversight? Because we can't wait for those processes to be concluded. We were doing oversight with regard to, for example, what is happening in the PICC. So we won't have any information. We can't go to Economic Development Department. It's no longer, in fact, it's being phased out. There's no minister for Economic Development Department, which was responsible for infrastructure and the coordination of the PICC. So what is going to be the situation now with regard to holding the government accountable? So the normally when we invite departments, we expect that a presentation should be different from the presentation of the NA, that the presentation should also talk to provinces. For example, issues such as EPWPs and the conditional grants, we would like you to have a situation as to how you allocate your budget with regard to those areas. The built environment professional council, I just want to know if there's any allocation from the department to such councils, or they are just independent financially from the department. DM, I'm also concerned about the number of legislation that you bring into Parliament. Normally, most departments in the IPVs, especially the first year, you know, they would indicate the list of bills that they will be bringing to Parliament. And then for the first 3 years, nothing happened. And then the fourth year and the last year, a lot of bills then come before Parliament. And most of them then they lapse because, you know, there's no time for Parliament to consider all of them when they are only brought, say, 2 years before the term ends of Parliament. I think the Honourable Tim raised the issue of, I think also the issue of projects that we were also talking about the PMTE. If we could get information also provincially, what is happening with regard to such. I think the Honourable raised the issue of the issue of assets and the registration. I'm also interested to know whether now, as you know, you have the number of assets that you have controlled. But also, even outside South Africa, in the continent and in other continents as well, whether you know the assets that you have. The last point is the issue of land. I think DM will know about this one. There's an area in East London, next to the East London Airport. There are two things that are happening. There are shacks that have been built, but also there are civil servants that are building very big, nice houses there. I think the tendency, I raised this also in the past, the tendency from the department is that once land is occupied that belongs to public works, they will just then give it to the municipality. If it's a gift, it's like giving me a house that is already full of occupants, and then you say, this is yours. Then the problem of the people that are inside is also my problem. So if you can also respond to that situation, what are you doing with regard to the land that has been occupied? Because then it gives an expectation now to those people that have been occupying the land for years that that land will then automatically be given to them. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is very simple and straightforward. It will go straight to the DDG. I'd like to know, in terms of skills, as you know, we have a problem of artisan in this country. So I just want to know how many this financial year, how many are you going to train? And then so far in the previous financial year, how many have you trained and how many are employed nationally and provincially? If you don't have the statistics, it's fine if you can send it to the committee secretary. As the honorable member said, yeah, we are dealing with provinces, so we'd like to know the breakdown of those numbers. And then the second one, I just want to know, how are you going to address the issue of project being delivered on time? Because if you can check in terms of construction of schools, it takes time for the department to finish it. And then the second one is the issue of transformation, particular in the sector of building and construction. As you know, or as you can see, that is dominated by females. So how are you going to make sure that it both balances? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Tegula. Honorable Apreni, are you?
Thanks, Chair.
If you did not raise your head,
I'm sorry.
That was not an invitation.
Now, Chair, I'll be very quick. I think Honorable Sai covered a lot of questions that I had. It would only be comments, I think. You know, around the issue of EPWP, which I think it cannot be overemphasized that indeed there are problems there, but I'm quite glad to see that the department seems to realize that and they are beginning to zoom in, especially with the issue of hiring. You'd find that in most cases, most of the projects of the EPWP are used by certain individuals for their either political purposes or whatever, I don't know. But it really worries some of us to see in most cases, especially the ward councillors, using the projects like EPWP for political reasons, hiring a certain section of the community. So in most cases, you would find that it does not serve the actual purpose that it's supposed to serve. So I'm quite glad that to see that the department is zooming in into that. And then the question of fraud and corruption. I've listened to the, I think it was the minister, of Minister Senzo. When, if government does not work together, as all of these departments, to fight the question of corruption, fraud and corruption, you know, we need to declare war against it. Yeah, it's really compromising, not just the state, but the image of South Africa internationally. Yeah, so I would like to appeal that we put more measures to fighting fraud and corruption in all departments. So then there's the issue of the buildings. You know, public works have a lot of, you know, in the former CPVC states, you have a lot of buildings which are now collapsing. I really do not know what is happening. No one seems to be doing anything about them. They are being vandalized. In some cases, in the areas where you had, in your Dimbaza area, you know, Wilisi, Danzane, the buildings which were used for factory purposes and all of that, industrial areas. And there are some other buildings which were used by public works before. If you go to Zwelitsha, on your way to church, you'd find there are buildings there which are collapsing currently. And no one is doing anything about those buildings. So I really do not know whether it's a question of having an attitude with that previous administration. So I think that we need to pay attention to that. We need to utilize such buildings instead of wasting resources leasing from the buildings which are built by multinational companies which are charging huge amounts of money. So, and then there is this question of transformation, especially in the construction sector, which my colleague here was talking about. I think a radical intervention is needed. We can't keep on negotiating transformation. At some stage, I think government needs to intervene very harshly. Black people cannot keep on looking for leftovers. You know, it's like we have to sit under the table like that Abraham, what, in the Bible, looking for scrambles for someone else. It can't be correct. You know, we need to address the question of transformation very, very radically. It has to be, you know, at some departments you keep on hearing them talking about 30%. 30% of what? It can't be. You can't continue doing that. We have to address the question of transformation very radically. We cannot keep on living like foreigners in our own country. It is not right. It's wrong. It's 25 years. We're approaching 30 years now into democracy. And there's nothing tangible that is shown in terms of transforming the lives of black people. If we are addressing the question of equality, we must do it radically. It can't be correct that we keep on negotiating for that. I'm quite glad that DG, you are talking about filling of vacancies, because it really hampers the question of service delivery. We really need to address that. I only have those, but I do not really agree with my two colleagues about the delegation that you have brought here. Yes, I understand that maybe in the long run you'll have to reduce it. But like myself, when you know, it's a new term, everyone needs to get along very well. All need to understand what happened so that they can be able to assist in implementation. So if you left them behind in these early stages, they might get lost. They might not get the real vision. What is it that you want to achieve as a department? Thank you very much.
Honorable Lansman. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, my brother, for today raising the issue of transformation.
so harsh and straight. The issue of transformation is non-negotiable. You must make it clear from us, yes. While we are here, we are going to remind you every time we call you. And when you come back, you must tell us, this is where we stand, this is where we are going. As a department, linked to you, linked to your plans. You are the key department in helping the president create 6 million jobs. You are the key department. How do you plan to do that? How? How are you going to address the three triple challenges? Unemployment, inequality, and poverty. How? Not for a certain few, but for the majority. Many buildings have been looted, province to province, region to region. Where I come from, there are certain buildings that were just taken and people are owning it, which belong to you and you do nothing. Are you in collusion with those companies or are you not aware? Where is the audit of those buildings that are looted and nothing has been done? The land audit of land unused, planning to be sold, before it's being going to be sold, what is your plans to address the triple challenges? What is your plans as a department? Inequality can't continue when you are the key driver of economics, the key driver of job creation. So, I like what Department of Human Settlement speaks. It says we are going to take the land. We'll be the first department to expropriate land. They are saying it boldly. The minister does not mind it. What is your plan? Do you have a plan? Please let us focus on changes. The inequality gap is getting wider. People are suffering more. The rich are getting richer. I don't hear you speak about the 2010 collusion. Why are you not talking about the collusion? Why are you defending white monopoly? Because they have stolen a lot of money during the 2010 and no one is saying anything. It's money from this department. We are going to support you, and my approach also differ. We are all differing. We are not having the same view because we are from different parents. The fact that you brought so many people, for me, although there is a cost to it, I like it. You take us serious as a department, as a portfolio, and we want to encourage you. Where you can continue, continue, because this is where you push down service delivery to the poorest of the poor better. And the approach, you must just make sure whatever approach you are using, whether it's top to bottom or bottom to top, it is working. We need to have an approach that is working. Because at the end of the day, I have seen all those beautiful people, but where is the DDG operations? We are provinces. Where is the DDG regional operations? There is such a DDG. Where is he or she? So that's the key person when it comes to provincial operations, because we are the NCOP. Your regional officers that falls under that specific DDG are not visible. Your regional officers, remember, you're one department apart from having provincial embassies. You also do have a regional base in each province, which is called a regional office. Unlike other departments, you do have that specific thing I'm linking to, which you are sending money straight to those regions apart from the provincial budgets. I need you, as the previous speakers have said, it must be more detailed because we are speaking about provinces here. So you must at least be able to say to me in Eastern Cape, that's a regional office, this is the plan to better lives for this time. In Northwest, this is the plan people are planning in that regional office. Because it falls under you, it's part of your budget scope. But so far, so good. I know the, is it TG or acting DG? DG, congratulations. I know you've been acting long, from Solibo Malibe's time, very long. So, well done. You know the ropes, you are there, have been there for long.
We are going to support you, but please focus on one thing, addressing the terrible challenges, inequality, poverty, and unemployment. Chair, don't do that, please. We are together in this thing, allow our space like you allow the others. We are just here to support you as the committee, and we are going to push you. From our side, just bring us a land audit from my side, and an audit of all buildings looted, where you must be clear, because I'm going to tell you during that time, this building situated there and there. Why is it not here? Because it was your building, it's still your building, it's looted. It's subleased by someone and someone and someone. Please, go and do that for us. We are here to support you. You have a good minister, and we support you and your deputy minister. You have a good team. We are going to be behind you. Gangsters are killing each other. We don't hear you with a plan of job creation while people are killing each other. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Landsman. Hey, Honorable Mushul.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think I'm covered. That is the advantage to be the last one. But one thing, DM, I was checking your delegation here. Our mandate, you know, I've seen we've got only 6 females. Next time, men, male must be 3, female must be 15. Thank you, DM.
Thank you, Adrian Musodi.
Sorry, Chair. Chair, may I just quickly clarify one of my questions? Just it'll take 10 seconds.
Okay.
The question that I asked on transformation, we all agree that transformation is important, and I certainly stand in favor of that. But the question I want to ask you is very specific. How are you going to balance the needs of transformation and the needs that Honorable Lansman has pointed out, and the requisite skills to make sure that the job is done properly?
Ming was appointed without a...
Sorry, I didn't interrupt you. Okay. How are you going to balance transformation with the requisite skills that are required to get the job done? Thank you.
Thank you, other members. Just one point, two. The expropriation, is it linked to the process that is unfolding under the Constitutional Review Committee? I know that this bill was passed, it was sent to the President. The President did not sign it, fed it back to Parliament. The assumption was that it's because it did not make provision for expropriation without compensation. I just want to check whether are the two processes linked or not. Second one, in one of the meetings that you attended in our previous lives, the DM in her previous life, one of the concerns that was raised by the two speakers was the maintenance and renovation around Parliament. The sense that one got was that there was a lot of frustration that our presiding officer, both the former speaker and the former national chair, raised around the reluctance on the part of the department to renovate Parliament. And even the issue of office space was raised. And the first meeting that I attended was in Taj Hotel. And in that meeting, they raised concern that they don't have space. And when we went to Taj Hotel, then I said, oh, what the two previous speakers and the leader chair were raising. Indeed, it is correct. So I think we are better positioned because now the deputy minister is in charge. She will understand the concerns that are faced by both the national chair and the national speaker. Over to you, DM. One of the proposals that where you can't respond, we are ready to allow the department to provide answers in writing. Thank you. Over to you, DM.
Chair, I'm tempted to, well, thank you for the comments and the questions first. But I'm tempted to allow the department which is the officials, to respond first, so that I then round up. But I think that the very last one, especially from yourself, is an issue that we probably, as as leadership of the country must be seized with. In terms of saying, Parliament in Cape Town does not have enough space. But there's another discussion that has started elsewhere, which says move Parliament to Pretoria. And the department was tasked to say, look at the feasibility thereof. Now, whilst the department is busy with the feasibility, do you start increasing space when you are thinking of moving? So those are the questions that arise. And therefore, I would implore all of us to start being a bit patient, but we will, on our side, try to push for that feasibility to be done faster and quicker, so as to be able to finally make the decision. Because if you then finally make the decision whether you move Parliament or you don't move Parliament, that will then help us to say, we're not moving Parliament, we increase in space. Or we move in Parliament and therefore we provide space where it is going to. I thought that at least that one let me quickly dispense of, but with the others I will take as they move along, but I will ensure that at the end we round up. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, TM. They will have seven minutes, then you'll have the three minister on DM. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'll deal with other questions. My colleagues will add. I'll start with the expropriation. There are two parallel processes. The Constitutional Review Committee is doing its work. The department is doing its work in terms of the working on this bill, which already was published for comment. Now we're dealing with the comments. There is an IMC that is chaired by the Deputy President, wherein we report. We have been requested to develop an action plan of how, when are we going to finalize this project. So I think we'll also report also in the respective committee. So there are two processes. With respect to the prestige clients, I think DM also covered it a bit here, this one. It's the legislature, executive, and judiciary. I know that already the minister and the DM has given some directive that we must change this name to reflect properly as to who are we serving. We are working on it.
To be politically correct.
Now we have taken the directive from the minister and the deputy minister. With respect to the delegation, this delegation could have been bigger, because I also requested the region here to, when we are here in Cape Town, we want also our regional office to be part and parcel of the deliberations here. And some of the people who might be here for other business, if they are around, normally we request them to come and attend. Like one of the colleagues there, he was not necessarily a delegate of this meeting, but I think we have taken the notes with respect to comments that have been made. With respect to the role and responsibilities of this committee in relation to the extended mandate, we are in a transitional period wherein we are working together with the department. Even if the EDD is no longer there, the function is there. We are working with them. They are not yet incorporated in the Department of Public Works because we have been given timelines. The formal implementation of the reconfiguration was given the time frame of saying come the 1st of April 2020. We should be fully implementing it. But as we speak now, we've got the reconfiguration task team, which is working with those departments, relinquishing department, us as a receiving department, we are ensuring that we develop a working relationship so that when there are reports that are required, we'll actually be able to provide. So you will not run short of reports, even if they are not here, but if there are issues that need to be raised, you can raise them, we'll be able to ensure that we respond. On issues of oversight also, because they are still residing in the new Department of Trade and Industry and Competition, we can actually direct as to how can they be identified, and if you want to meet with them, we can actually facilitate. With respect to the issue of, I think this one will maybe, we'll provide a report on the number of people at SMS level in terms of the gender, number of people at disability with respect to the gender. This one requires a report. We commit that we'll actually ensure that we provide a report to the committee. And then the gym at Acacia Park, I think the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, we've done our work. Our work was to provide a facility. Our responsibility is the facility, infrastructure, the infrastructure, not the contents inside the infrastructure. So I think, I know that this matter is still a matter that is hanging, but Parliament, we have had a session with the parliamentary officials to ensure that they take the responsibility of ensuring that that gym has got the necessary facilities inside, because we're, the infrastructure is there. There's also a question that relates to the, I think some of the issues, DM, I'll hand over to the colleagues to undertake. I think I'll suggest that my colleagues take the issues that are outstanding. Thanks very much.
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, members of the committee, I will also do a kind of summary of those I can respond to. The first issue was regarding the conduct of investigation within 30 days, and I'll link that to the question and the comments on fraud and corruption by another member of the committee. What I want to say is we have not failed to initiate an investigation within 30 days. Our challenge has always been to complete it within a reasonable time. Some of the investigations do extend into a long period of time due to complexity. But what I want to say about fraud and corruption is a catch-all phrase. We've had a number of proclamations, SIU proclamations in the department, and we also have a standalone anti-corruption unit. And I want to assure the committee, and we'll be willing to present to the committee, that we have now charged in excess of 150 people for various allegations of fraud and corruption. We also have close to R1 billion worth of recovery with the asset forfeiture unit, and we are recovering close on to 400 million from landlords for space sold to us in excess of what was transacted in lease agreements and various other irregularities. So from an investigation point of view, we are on top of it insofar as fraud and corruption is concerned. Going forward, we want to plug the gaps and focus on prevention and consequence management and accountability. So that's where we're at the moment, Chair. What I want to say as well with regard to the issue of vacancy rates, women employment rates, and people with disabilities, I do agree that we are missing that on our plans. In fact, we realized it in the last few days while we were planning for our next 5 years, that these are areas that we need to embed in our planning. In fact, the new MTSF demands that we embed these, as well as youth employment and other challenges around the youth, in our planning, and we certainly will take it on board in our next plan. Then I want to talk about the concern that was expressed regarding the lack of information about provincial spreads. And I want to just indicate on the one hand that we do have some information, especially on the PMTE, around provincial spreads. I think the fact that we didn't go through that slide might have missed it. But what we'll undertake to do, when we go back to the office, we'll send you all that information. This was the provincial spread on all EPWP, construction, and the rest of it. So we'll take that. And then with respect to the PCs, the Built Environment Professional Councils, no, we don't fund them. They are funded mainly through their own revenue, which is membership fees of their members. But they do struggle. For example, the landscape architects, accessible profession is so small, they are not unable to survive. And they have made requests to the department for support. We're trying to help them become self-sustainable.
because as I mentioned before, they are not loyal to our goals. They're also loyal to their members. They have various loyalties, and they don't want to account to us. So perhaps we can use that for leverage in the future. With respect to legislation, what I want to say is that that is correct, that this thing of dumping things in the last year of the administration is not a good practice, and we are avoiding that. And what you have in the year ahead is the commencement of the process. And I do acknowledge in the past years we've not performed well in this area. And it either goes through into the sixth administration, and over a period of time, perhaps in year three, we'll begin to table. But we take on board the advice of the committee members that we shouldn't be dumping legislation when the administration is up. Then, Chairperson, I'm moving on to the question about the East London Airport and also other comments made by members regarding illegally occupied buildings as well as hijacked buildings. And we have this program called Operation Bring Back, a very difficult program. It also addresses the comments of the honorable member around the former homelands, the TBBC states, some of those buildings. And we have a list now of about 1,500 properties which we believe we own that have either been hijacked or otherwise illegally occupied. So the next step is to go and regulate and regularize the occupation, take it back or sell it. So very often you'll find land is also occupied by people who are perhaps homeless, so we need to deal with this in a sensitive manner. But I want to assure the committee we have Operation Bring Back, which my colleague Mr. Marocha will be executing into the next phase to deal with the East London airports, as well as those abandoned buildings in the TBBC states. And then, with respect to skills, madam, I will take on board your concession that we can give a written response. I can go back to the office and get back all the statistics and provide them in writing. With respect to OBB, I beg your pardon, EPWP and abuse of EPWP. See, our challenge is that EPWP is a national program, and EPWP job creation and work opportunities is funded by the public body, not by us. So if you have, for example, a problem with Etiquini Municipality, we are not able to investigate it as such because it's their budget, it's their project. What we can do, we can provide guidance, and that is why we have these recruitment guidelines. However, I must add that where we can investigate, because of questions like these and our national kind of coordination role, we will investigate. In fact, if the evidence comes, we will approach the public body and we will conduct an investigation in the interest of the credibility of this program. And we have done so in the past. In fact, we conducted an investigation in Etiquini, if I may mention, and we were able to make clear findings there in that particular regard. And then I move on to the issue of transformation, and I think that question, in fact, Chairperson, what has transpired is that the question almost the two colleagues and the two members raised varying issues. The last input is about how to achieve the balance between transformation objectives and the skills, required skills in a project, and the earlier colleague mentioned about radically addressing the needs of transformation. They're almost in collision, these questions. And what I must say is that we need to have an entire rethink with respect to transformation, because we haven't achieved our goals as such, and we need to do things differently. So without answering it in a manner that commits the department in any particular way, we are developing our new five-year plan, and we've acknowledged that with respect to transformation, it isn't simply about numbers, it's about that, but it's also about using the policy leverage and regulatory intervention to expand the industry, to give more people an opportunity, and to spread the work around, to create skills, and to generally change the entire face of the construction industry in particular, as well as the property industries. So we do have considerations about balancing the transformation objectives and ensuring the job gets done. So I cannot answer that in specific terms today, but what I will say is, especially regarding the additional function we have about driving economic growth. I will simply say that we are alive to these needs, and we need to do a lot more, and we are engaging that in our next five-year plan. Regarding collusion, sorry, Chairman, I apologize.
Let's agree that those that are standing, you will
thank you.
Collusion. Okay.
Yeah, actually, the Competition Commission is a key driver there and has then meted out all the penalties. In fact, the CIDB, our public entity, is also trying to penalize those companies, and their view is double jeopardy. They cannot be penalized twice. So that's where we're at. Thank you.
But on the note that you'll provide written responses to the committee. Mr. Marwar?
I just want to answer one question, I think, which is quite critical. I think it's the issue about the asset register. And that's the only one I'll deal with. The rest we can deal with it in terms of written response. The issue is we now have what I call an auditable asset register. And the reason we use the word auditable is that the only arbiter of whether our audit register, our asset register is credible, is the AG. Because graft or the generally recognized accounting practice compels us to report our asset register in a way that complies to graft. And the AG is the only arbiter. And then when it comes to since 2017, when we're obligated to report in terms of graft, there are five criteria or assertions that the AG looks at in terms of our asset register. It says, does it exist? Is it existent? Is it complete? Do you have rights and obligations to these facilities that you are reporting? Can you measure them? And are they presented in the way that is required? So those are five. Now, on the five, four of those, the Auditor General has been ticking. The one that is the biggest one is called valuation. Valuation means you must measure, like this Parliament, you must measure its size and measure its value accurately. That has been the biggest one where we are having problems. So out of the five, one is a problem, and it's going to be a problem because it requires the countrywide proper measurements of our assets. So yes, it's an auditable. Many things have happened, but there are issues that we are dealing with, and that's the thing that. And I think at the moment we are waiting with the AG to come to more conclusions in terms of the valuation. I'll leave it there, and the rest I think can deal with it on a written basis.
Thank you, Mr. Maroka.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think the team has tried to cover as much of the questions, but I think that there is this one that we must say here, that we definitely are not afraid to implement that which we stood in front of the country to say we shall abide by our constitution. Transformation is not an option. It's not a choice. You can't choose. It's an obligation. And the constitution of our country enjoins us in its founding provision. It enjoins us to create that environment which heals, which addresses the injustices. So transformation is about addressing injustices of the past, and we therefore don't have a choice but to live up to that expectation of South Africans to realize transformation and to realize social justice. So we definitely are not afraid. Our programs are designed and will continue to be designed to address transformation. That would be my parting shot. Thank you.
Thank you, dear. Let me also take Honorable Hayes.
I just forgot this issue when I was asking questions. I just want to share through you that perhaps that we invited the minister and the deputy minister to visit the parliamentary villages so that they can themselves have an understanding of the condition in which, so that this term prestige, I agree that it must be changed. Because there's nothing prestigious about those, accommodation. Yeah. So perhaps during the constituency period, if it's possible that the minister and the deputy and the DG could visit, maybe a sample of each. That's all I wanted to.
Thank you. DM,
Thank you, Chair. I already have the list and the addresses. The minister has delegated me that duty to visit all residents of members, ministers, deputy ministers, members, which means your parts, and all other residences where house members, to try and deal with all complaints and address all challenges there. We're also having a meeting with the chair of the NSOP and the speaker. I can say the date is the 1st of August to deal with the same issue. So by that time, I shall have visited quite a number. Thank you.
Thank you, DM. Let me express my gratitude to you and the team for honoring our invite. We indeed appreciate the effort that the team put in terms of preparing for this meeting. We are going to have a dynamic relationship moving forward to ensure that indeed the electoral mandate is implemented. Thank you. We just have some last in-house rules to deal with, so the DM and the team is excused.
IDG, you are doing a good job. Like your deputy who is so knowledgeable, is going to move.
You need to cover all these things. After the vote. Recording is about 2 hours. Over 2 hours.
Honorable members, we have the minutes. To deal with the minutes of the last meeting, if all of us have the minutes, can we go to page 1? Any correction on page 1 of the minutes? Page 2? Page 3? Can we then get a mover for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Lansman, then Honorable Betters. Second. Honorable Chair.
Chairperson, I just want to indicate that I don't know if other members received the analysis for the to the department and the NDP. Did not receive any analysis.